Welcome to Chabad of Carmel Valley. My name is Mendel Polichenko, and we are happy and honored to have all of you here. Today we kick off our week of Yom Ha'atzmaut celebrations, a very important guest. I would like to take this opportunity to invite everybody. Thursday, we will have a barbecue at Nobel Park, 5 p.m. Everybody's invited to join. And at this time, our mind is in the land of Israel. So I'd like to invite everybody to join me while we say Psalm 121. If you would like to, please rise and look in the screen. You can read the Hebrew or the English as we pray for the safety of our brothers in Israel. Shir lamalot. Esa einai el ha'arim, me'ayin yavo ezri, ezri me'im adonai, oseh shamayim va'aretz, aliten lamod raglecha, al yanum shomrecha, hine lo yanum velo ishan shomer Israel, adonai shomrecha, adonai tzilcha al yad yeminecha. Yomam ha-shemesh lo yakeka ve'yareach ba'layla Adonai ishmorcha mikol ra ishmor et nafshecha Adonai ishmor sescha u'bo'echa me'ata ve'ad olam. I'd like to invite everybody to read in English the last two lines, two paragraphs of Psalm 69. When God saved Zion and built the city of Judah, and they dwell there and take possession of it, and the seed of his servants inherited, and those who love his name dwell therein. You may be seated. This was Linda's idea.
Oh, good idea.
And it's my pleasure to introduce Linda Snake, a strong member of Chabad Carmel Valley and the ZOA. And just for you to know, this is our home. Every day we have a minyan here. It's the only daily service in the area. And every day we have Torah classes. And this is your home for every Jew, Chabad of Carmel Valley, in this very room. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Rabbi. I want to thank you for that warm welcome, Rabbi, and thank this dear audience for coming on 1 week's notice. This was, it's just amazing. I feel honored to be a San Diegan Jew. We suffered an ugly blow recently, and Israel now is suffering horrific jihad attacks, and it's good to be together. And it's just good for us to have an opportunity to hear this amazing, esteemed speaker. We were, we are, and we always will be strong, proud Jews, connected to our history, to our Torah, and to our land, our blessed Zion. I guess I was meant to emphasize and to portray the blows that we've received recently. You can see I've taken a bit on the chin. My husband, Leon, says that you should see the other guy. So, I recently met Yishai Fleischer's counterpart, Jake Bennett, at the Republican Jewish Coalition in Las Vegas, where President Trump and Vice President Pence spoke to a very appreciative Jewish audience. Jake and Yishai have founded an important new coalition called the Israel Heartland Caucus. Jake called me just this last week and said, Yishai is in town. And we jumped, the rabbi, ZOA, we jumped on the opportunity to host him. Yishai will speak a bit about the caucus. There are materials available in the back of the room for reference, and you can certainly take them home. We have enough. And then afterwards, those who are particularly maybe interested in supporting this caucus that he will talk about in the future, there will be a VIP reception for those who might consider supporting it in the future, want more serious information about it, and a chance maybe to speak to Yishai one-on-one. I just want to speak from my heart for a minute, and that is that I am constantly feeling blessed to be alive at this time. I can't imagine that for 2,000 years, that's 100 generations of my ancestors were on this earth just wandering, just hoping to have a place to live, to raise a family, and to survive. And they were constantly chased away. They were slaughtered. Their property was taken from them. No matter whether we're talking about, Iraq, or we're talking about Poland, whether we're talking about Algeria, or whether we're talking about France, whether we're talking about England, all over the world, Jews have had to suddenly escape with their lives. I am amazed to be alive when there's an Israel. And so it's in my heart and soul to support the state of Israel and to support not just the state of Israel, but Eretz Israel, our homeland, the homeland of the Jewish people. And I think this is at least we can do while we still enjoy the diaspora, and there is some joy in the diaspora. We in America are really pretty spoiled. And this is what we, the least we can do. All right, excuse me for that. Right. Yishai Fleischer is the international spokesman for the Jewish community of Hebron. The first piece of property that a Jew purchased in Eretz Israel, our father Abraham purchased it in our promised land. There are so many misconceptions, misunderstandings about that precious homeland and the nature of life in the Middle East. But there are those on the Israeli scene who open windows of understanding for us American Jews, who care about the future of the state. No one is more illuminating, thoughtful, eloquent than our very special guest, Yishai Fleischer. You probably already know him as an Israeli broadcaster, a columnist for major news websites. The New York Times published his op-ed, we have a copy of that here, titled A Settler's View of Israel's Future. Let me briefly summarize just a few highlights of Yishai Fleischer's remarkable story. He was born in Haifa. His parents were refusenik scientists who made Aliyah in the 1970s. Due to his father's work, the family moved to New Jersey when Yishai was 8 years old, and that's where he lived and went to high school. When Yishai was 17, he returned to Israel to become a lone soldier in the IDF, serving in southern Lebanon, where he was seriously injured by a Hezbollah roadside bomb. Yishai made his recovery. He returned to the United States for college, getting a degree in political science from Yeshiva University and a degree in international law from Cardozo Law School. And now Yishai uses all of his learning, his experience, his talents, his love of Israel to help us understand more about the realities of life in that part of the world and in our homeland, and to raise questions and suggest some answers that are often not part of the American discourse. In particular, is two states a solution? It's wonderful to invite you here, so thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Shalom, everybody. How are you?
Shalom.
I just want you to know that I left Israel Wednesday night, last Wednesday night, okay? I usually go on 9-day trips, but I was just on a 9-day trip with APAC, and my kids get sad if I go too often. I got little kids, 11, 7, and 3, so I told them this was a week-long trip. I left Wednesday night I take the midnight, 1 a.m. flight from Ben Gurion, and I flew to Boston. And I did a beautiful event Thursday night in Newton, Massachusetts. Great event, beautiful community, interesting community. I woke up in the morning, ran and caught a flight to LaGuardia. I went then to the Five Towns, actually next to the Five Towns, a place called West Hempstead. Did an event, did four speaking events at West Hempstead. Saturday night, West Hempstead's very close to JFK. Saturday night, ran to the airport. It caught the 11 to Los Angeles. Okay, got to my hotel at 4 in the morning. All right? Yesterday was Sunday. No events, but important meetings. This morning, drove down here to San Diego, important meetings. And now you guys are, for me, the last of this very fast and special trip. In the meantime, just before I came here, I met with there's important, capable people that live in this community to help out our causes in Israel, met with them, and I also decided if I'm going to come down here, I'm going to go see Rabbi Goldstein at a Kaweh, a very beautiful place, and I went to see the man, and I also interviewed him for my show, and I wanted to give him strength from Hebron, from the mothers and fathers in Hebron, and I wanted to get some strength from him, and this is because the next part. In the meantime, while I went to give him a little bit of strength, in the meantime, and he was, his congregant murdered, his finger blown off, his other hand healing, and not in great shape. He's a we got to pray for him. In the meantime, in Eretz Yisrael, and this happens every time I leave. Right, my wife, this is a running joke. I leave, the place goes to heck. Okay, every time. So in the meantime, 700 rockets lobbed at Israel, 4 people, 3 Jews and 1 Druze killed. Also murdered, really. Killed with such a, why is that, like a military campaign? This was terrorism. This was plain old terrorism. So that's what was happening. That's it. So I'm coming to Poway, to give him strength and say, I'm paying attention in Israel to what's happening with you, and he's paying attention to what's happening with us. And look, sometimes the best things bring us together, but sometimes also pain and tragedy bring us together, and then realization that we're a special people, a unique people, and we have to hold hands across the Atlantic. And so, you're coming to, and I came to you here at the last event. I have never in my life done an event that took a week to organize. No such thing. We plan our trip 6 months in advance. 4 or 5 months in advance, easy. And to have such a wonderful crowd, and to have such a wonderful energy, it's a testament, I think, to Linda, who is identified as... She self-identifies as an independent Zionist. We should all be independent Zionists, okay? So thank you so much, Linda. Thank you for those remarks. ZOA is an organization that I work with throughout the country. ZOA is, I'm on their side and they're on my side. And I'll make it very, very plain for you. ZOA is one of the only organizations that brings students to Hebron. No fear. We're going to see our fathers and mothers, the tomb of the forefathers and mothers in Hebron. And what about students that many of... Birthright does not bring Jews across the Green Line, and certainly not to Hebron. But ZOA does. To me, I can just... Yeah, exactly. That deserves a hand. Applause. To me, that's like... If I say this organization is bringing Jews to Hebron, that's like... Period. I don't have to say anything else. To me, that is courage and the proper education and the correct future. A vision of... And it's a... Training our young people for correct thinking for the future through the connecting to the past. Okay? Now, the other organization that I work with throughout this whole country and around the world is Chabad. Okay? Where would we be without Chabad, folks? Now, Rabbi Pulichenko has got something that distinguishes him from the rest of Chabad. I know Chabad. I know, no, he's got a bit of beards. I know Chabad on the deepest DNA level. So many of us and myself are products of being taught through Chabad. But people said to me, Rabbi Pulichenko is the most Zionist Chabadnik there is. For various reasons, those are two words that don't always work exactly together for various historical reasons. Chabad is very, 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 very pro-Israel, pro-everything, but the word Zionist is not a word that they always like to attach to themselves. Rabbi Pulichenko is comfortable in that situation, and therefore all of these things together, plus the warmth of this community, makes this event, and I'm really, really thankful to be with you, and I feel like, wow, this is mamash, it's very much like a... And there's one more thing. Do you know what else? What is special about today, friends? Today is the new month, Rosh Chodesh, of a very special month, which is Iyar. Iyar. That's not that donkey from Winnie the Pooh. What was his name?
Iyar?
Yeah, that is not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is this month is the month that has really the major Land of Israel holidays, and they include Israel Memorial Day, Israel Independence Day, and maybe comes all together through Jerusalem Day, Jerusalem Reunification Day. Very important holiday, very holy holiday. And of course leads us towards that big holiday of receiving the Torah, which is Shavuot. But in this month, Iyar, it's got these major holidays, Israel Memorial. And I read a tweet, I wish I would have come up with this, but I read a tweet and it said the following. It said, Israel Memorial Day reminds us the cost of having a Jewish state. Right? The people that fell for the Jewish state. But Holocaust Memorial Day reminds us the cost of not having a Jewish state. True or not true? Yes. You know, folks, I like to think of myself as a smart guy. I like to think of myself like that. But I like to reduce things to simple things. Sometimes a lot of smartness, we get confused. And sometimes the dark forces use smartness and wittiness and facts and figures to actually confuse us from simple truths. The Holocaust makes it very simple to us. This is what happens when you're not conglomerated as a Jewish state. Maybe, by the way, on a deeper level, maybe there was a Holocaust, maybe. As some kind of beginnings of the Jewish state, some kind of offering, some kind of thing that we had to know, like, here's two opposites. Maybe we had to almost die to know what this great gift is. I don't know. We can't talk about it, but like in any definitive terms. But there is a linkage between the Holocaust, which was almost the end of the Jewish people, and a rebirth in the land of Israel, and that's what we're living in. We're really living in, as Linda said properly, in really really messianic times, amazing times. It's not so tricky, by the way. Ask your Gentile neighbor; he'll tell you. He knows. You guys were promised. You were dispersed. You were promised to be brought back. You're being brought back. The Hebrew language, reborn. The Jewish people, an eternal people, reconstituted in the land of Israel in an era of the Third Commonwealth. Language reborn, economy up, miraculous wars. We're really living in amazing times. And the only reason that we wouldn't know that is because the dark forces out there want to put a lot of garbage on top of this thing in order to kind of make it look like it's not an amazing and beautiful thing that's happening. Our enemies have really... How could it be that the world wants to pretend that Israel is some kind of bad country? Abusive country. Illiberal country. When I speak with liberals, when I speak a lot with liberals, I'm, by the way, the token settler, quote-unquote, for J Street and for other organizations. I ask them for that job. I say, please let me be the spokesman for the settler community, please. And they let me, sometimes. We're living in a time where it's so obvious. I get up in front of these groups and I say to them, guess what, liberal friends, you won. You won! We created the most liberal country in the Middle East. It's by far the most liberal country in the Middle East, by far. So be happy. Oh, it can't be totally liberal because it has to also protect itself. Fine. But like, just be happy with our great achievements. But the dark forces out there want to make it look like somehow Israel is an illiberal country, a dark country. I'll give you an example. What was this rocket thing about this week? What was it all about? What happened, right? Look at that face. The face that you're making is how most people understand it. What happened? Does anybody have a sense of what happened this week?
Ramadan,
okay.
Eurovision.
John, what's your name, sir?
Oren.
Oren is absolutely right. Behind it all was a geopolitical game. What happened? Last year, what's the Eurovision? What is the Eurovision? Do you know?
Musical.
You don't know. That's right. You gave the right answer. You have no idea. Right? Because it's not important here in America at all. That it's not important. But in Europe and in the Mediterranean basin, it is important.
Sorry.
I thought you were. So you do know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you're just playing along with me. Thank you.
You make you more smart.
Thank you. I need that. Okay. So
The Eurovision is this big competition, like American Idol. You know, it's like a big competition for songs, and it's the whole Mediterranean basin. Really, if you want to understand it, it's the Super Bowl. It's a big old event. Big old event. Now, last year, what was her name? I forgot her name. Netta Barzilai. She won this Eurovision contest. Now, the winners of the Eurovision contest get to have it in their country the next year around. Okay? So this, what?
Capital.
The capital of the country. Good, in Jerusalem. Good. So, now many European countries were like, oh, they gnashed their teeth. Darn it. Why doesn't Israel have to win? And but anyway, they capitulated because that's the rules and you got to play nice. And this year they're having the Eurovision in Israel, which means all these Euro countries are sending their people to Israel. And here's this like recognition that Israel is this normal, nice, happy country, right? Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, awesome, right? Huh?
Not in Jerusalem.
It's a Tel Aviv. You told me capital.
I was supposed to be
in the capital. It's better than it's in Tel Aviv. It's better that way. Good. Anybody wants to come to Jerusalem to get on the bus? Good. It's going to be more peaceful for everybody if it's in Tel Aviv. Anyway, for various reasons. In any case, so and Tel Aviv is the economic and cultural capital of Israel. Certainly not the capital, not the spiritual capital, not the political capital, but an important, the important metropolis. By the way, how many Jews live in the Tel Aviv metropolis, just for you?
I guess about
3 million. That's the number one Jewish metropolis in the world. What's the second biggest Jewish metropolis?
New York.
Oh, yeah, Brooklyn, that's right. Brooklyn, I love Brooklyn. It's like going back to the shtetl. It's the best. I love it. I get my salami on rye. I love it. It's a very interesting thing. In any case, our enemies wanted to use this opportunity to make Israel look bad. How do they make us look bad? By actually making sure that we kill their people. That's how they work. They know that Israel cannot be defeated like the old way you defeat people, by defeating them. The new way is to blacken Israel's eye. So what their thing was, we'll attack Israel in the hopes that Israel will attack us back very strongly. And a lot of our people will be killed. Hopefully we'll get some good footage of that. And that's how cynical it is. Let me tell you a story. I was on Al Jazeera during the big last Gaza war. Okay? And I was called in to speak on Al Jazeera. And I have a lot of friends in the media. I've been in the media for many years. So I said to my friend, who is a reporter that you guys know, so I'm not going to use his name. Let's call him Bill. I said, Bill, I would just call. What happens is that my phone rings and it says Qatar. I don't have a lot of friends in Qatar. So I know it's Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is calling. So, hello, Mr. Fleischer. They always have some kind of British accent. What is that? But in any case, so they called me up and they said, would you come on the show today? Thank you. We'd love to have you. And I know that this is about to be a drag out fight, right? But they're so pleasant on the phone. So I said to him, Bill, I was just called into Al Jazeera. What should I say in Al Jazeera, Bill? What do you think Bill told me? He said, tell them how moral we are. Show them that we try so hard to minimize civilian casualties. And that we sometimes even bomb a terrorist house by first throwing this kind of empty bucket, if you will, called a knock rocket. It's like a joke. Knock, knock, right? We throw this thing down. That's what he said. Isha, you have to tell them how moral we are. I said to him, Bill, I love you. That is so dumb. Because what do you mean? They're trying to say we're immoral. We have to say we're moral. I said, Bill, I'm going on TV. They're going to have footage of a kid being pulled out of the rubble. And the minute that I'm about to unroll that so Jewishy line, how we try so hard to minimize casualties, and we're nice, we're really, really nice, we're nice. The minute I say that, there's going to be a guy at the video room, and he's going to pull up that video of the kid being pulled out of the rubble. The minute I say that stuff, that's how TV works. I'll start talking. I'm like, we're trying to be so nice. And they'll just pull up that kid being pulled up. And what am I going to look like? A big liar. Let's be honest, a big Jewish liar, you know? Just my mind, that's exactly the little corner they want to put me into. So I'm on Al Jazeera and they go, Mr. Fleischer, how can you explain that 2,000 Palestinians have been killed and only 70 Israelis? That's what they ask me. Like I'm supposed to defend some kind of like parody, right? Like, those make me a little... So now I could feel that they were waiting for me to be like, no, we're trying so hard to minimize casualties, I could feel them just with a little, you know, it used to be called a chyron. It's like a little lever, you know, where they play the video. So they asked me, how could it be that 2,000 people have been killed on the Palestinian side, only 70 on the Israeli side? So I said to them, that's exactly what happens when you mess with us. I said to them, that's exactly what happens when you mess with us. We are a post-Holocaust people. We do not want one hair and one Jewish child injured. And if you hit us with rockets, we'll hit you 10 times as hard.
Amen.
Yeah. And I said, if you put your kids in front of our rockets, you would have murdered them. Okay? That's what you do. You fire those rockets and you expect us to fire back and you put your kids in front of it. That is your murder. That's what you're doing. So the video guy's like, now? What do I play this thing, you know? You have to tell it to them straight. Later on in that very same conversation, they came back to the same thing because they thought maybe that was a fluke. So they came back to it in a different way. And they said, Mr. Fleischer, how could it be that Hamas has sent over 3,000 projectiles and only 70 Israelis have been killed? That's a weird question. I said to them, I have to take off my journalist hat and put on my rabbi hat. I said to them, they shoot these projectiles and Allah swats them away. And how else could you explain it? I said, how else could you explain it? Is there any other way? What, Hamas doesn't know how to aim? They're stupid? Is that what you're saying? No! Allah protects the Jewish people. Allah is with us. This was Al Jazeera. They're just like... I never heard that. A lot of times we make a lot of hasbara. You know what the word hasbara means? It means explaining Israel's position. We make a lot of mistakes, folks. We make a lot of mistakes. We make all kinds of mistakes, and it really puts us in the doghouse. It really does. I can give you a lot of examples. I'll just give you a few just to give you kind of a sense for things. First thing, on the too much right wing way. I never talk about the Arabs. I don't say the Arabs. And I don't even say fundamentalist Islam. And I don't say, what else do they call it? Radical Islam.
Terrorists?
No.
Salafists.
What?
Salafists.
No, people don't use that term. But I use this, I have a very simple term that I use to talk about the bad guys. Jihadists. It's a simple word. Learn to use it, friends. Don't talk about the Arabs, the Jews against the Arabs, because people don't like that. Here in America, they feel... And first thing, it's not true. It's simply not true. Don't use the term the Arabs or Arabs. There's jihadists. Whenever you use that with anybody, a liberal person, a Gentile, whoever it is, they're like, oh yeah, the bad guys. Those guys. It's the difference between German and Nazi. Mm-hmm. Nazi is an ideology that seizes, plays on specifically Germans, etc. Right? On the whole, I'm using a big picture, but you're not saying all Germans are, but all Nazis pretty much are, okay? Same thing with the jihad. I don't use the term Arabs, I just say the jihad. And I sometimes will even tell the liberal folks, I'll say to them, I'm using this term specifically as to not stereotype. And you know why? Because I have many Arab friends, and I mean friends of Israel, people who hate the jihad, people who hate the corruption. There are many Arabs on the other side, they're silent because they're afraid themselves of the jihad. That's a simple term. You use a term that is... Was there a question?
What? Okay. It depends on your definition of jihad.
Okay, there's always a smart aleck person, okay, who will ask you that. And I say, you remember the old Supreme Court case, I was in law school, about pornography? Like, we were trying to figure out what pornography is. In the end, they said, you know when you see it, right? That was you know exactly what I'm talking about. Those folks that cut people's heads off, the jihadists, that stuff, then, okay? Easy enough, all right? Easy enough.
What about the ones who sit there quietly, and right now I don't see a single Muslim getting up and saying this is wrong?
So that's a great question, and the answer is there's a certain percentage, maybe not a small percentage, of Arab Muslim world that supports the jihad. It exists very much inside their mind.
All five of them are against it.
Huh?
I said all five of them are against it.
All five of what?
Arabs are against it.
I'm saying to you, don't know the numbers. It's hard to know. There are Arabs that are underneath are pro-jihad, even if they might not do a thing about it, but they're supportive in general. And then there are Arabs who hate it, but they're not going to say much.
What I'm saying is they're all five of them, the percentage.
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. You don't know that. It's hard to know. In Hebron, for example, it's an 80% Hamas city, but we have a whole tribe called Jabri, which is about 40,000 people. They're anti-jihad. It's hard to know. It's very hard to know. The truth of the matter is it's hard to know. In the end, you have to use the terminology that we use in Israel, which is kabdeo v'chashdeo. Respect them and suspect them. Okay? Treat people with respect, but be suspect of them. That's the bottom line. Okay, so that's one mistake, okay? Another mistake we make, I'm going to shock you now, okay, friends? But I promise you... Oh, by the way, when I say something, nobody here has to accept what I say. I'm giving you my narrative. Here's how I understand the world. You can buy into that. You can not buy into that. How did that feel, by the way, when I just said that? It felt good. You know that? I use that especially with liberal folks all the time. I say to them, I'm here to speak with you today. I'm here because I want to have a conversation with you. You don't have to accept my opinion. I'm not speaking to you truth. I'm speaking to you my truth, my narrative, the way I see the world. That right there, for many people here in this room, that is not exactly a comfortable language because it's a kind of, we believe in historical truths, mathematical truths, but that's not the younger generation today. They are not there. And when you say, I'm here to share with you the way I see things, it really helps them deal with it. So if you're in a conversation, I heard a little bit of a Russian accent, is that right? That's okay, I'm a Russian Jew, okay? He's not sure, okay? You're one of mine, all right? But I can tell you that as Russian Jews, sometimes we come down like, God
bless.
Very hard.
It's either or.
It's very hard. And Russian Jews fall on this, okay? They fall on this. And by the way, they also fall with their own kids. I've now spoken to a lot of this generation. They're not able to speak to their kids who are Americanized in the same way. Sometimes we have to say, let me share with you the way I see things. If you say that instead of, this is the truth, you know, in the Russian sense, which I agree with you. No, don't misunderstand. I'm with you on everything. I'm just saying to you, when we talk to the younger generation, sometimes we have to take us, and my mother taught me such a great lesson. As a Russian Jew, and just as an Israeli aggressive person, when I'm angry, when I believe in something, I step in to argue with you. I'm going to beat you down. Okay? And what I've learned is, my mother taught this to me, when I feel like I want to do that, I take a step back. I take a step back, and I'm going to share with you from a little bit more of a distance. I'm going to calm down and speak to you, and I'm going to tell you, let me tell you, I hear what you're saying, I understand your position. Look, I see it a little differently. Here's the way I see it. Think about that, okay? Now I'm going to shock you a little bit, friends. I'm going to tell you about something that you've been taught for a long time that has been an important and good piece of your hasbara for many years, and it's totally wrong.
That's your opinion.
It's my opinion, of course. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's only my opinion. My opinion is that it's totally wrong. And that is Jewish and democratic. You've been taught for a long time that the terminology of Jewish and democratic is a beautiful, valuable thing, and that Americans and stuff will buy into it because they're also democratic. Here's the problem with Jewish and democratic. The truth is, I'm going to shock you, but you all know it inside your heart. The state of Israel is an ethnic national state defending its national ethnic minority in a tough region. And here's how I start when I speak with liberal folks all the time. I ask them, how many Arabs are there in the world? And I throw out to you, my friends. How many Arabs are there? Not Muslims, sir. Arabs. How many Arabs are there in the Middle East? Huh? No, not a billion. There's a billion Muslims. A lot? How much? 200? Okay. I love you guys. You guys are the best. The fact is, you don't really know. You're not tight on it. And you know what? It's an amazing thing. And if I did anything tonight, this is the one thing I want you to remember. Okay? If anything comes out of tonight, remember this. There's 400 million Arabs.
they all read the Quran.
Hold on, take it easy. I'm making a point, which is a different point. You didn't get to the conclusion yet. Huh? Arabs. Not Turks, not Persians, not Indonesians, not at Black Africa. Talking about Arabs. From North Africa, from West North Africa to the Persian Gulf, there's 400 million Arabs. How many Jews are there in the Middle East? 6.5 million, going towards 7 quickly. Okay? There are two kinds of minorities in the Middle East. Armed and unarmed. There's Yazidis. There's Copts. Who are Copts? They're actually the ancient Egyptians. You know that? And they are some of the first Christians. How are those guys doing? They've been there for a long time. How are they doing? Lotov, okay? Not good. They're getting blown up, getting chased out. Christians in general. How about Yazidis? How are those guys doing? Living in those mountains in Iraq. Lotov, okay? What about the Kurds? The Kurds are Muslims. But the jihad doesn't like them. They're okay.
They're armed.
Come to northern Iraq. They are armed. They have a beautiful autonomous area. It's autonomous Kurdistan, a Kurdistan autonomous region in north Iraq. Kirkuk, all these places. They're really succeeding today. Why? Because they're armed. They have an army called the Peshmerga, and they push back on the bad guys. And like them, there's another minority in this region that survives, that the big jihadist majority wants to eat up. There's a small minority that makes it. It's called the Jews. Israel. And this little country is there to defend its ethnic group. Now, when you say that to liberal folks, you say, or whoever, students, young people, whoever it is, you say there's 400 million Arabs and there's 6.5 million Jews. Within the Arab world, there is jihadism. It's prevalent. And within that, there's a tiny minority that has to defend themselves. And this is a persecuted minority living on its ancestral homeland. And it has enemies from without, and it's trying to defend this, and it went through a Holocaust, this minority, and now it's living in this land. What is Israel? It's an ethnic national state. Are there any other ethnic national states that you know of? Can you throw one out for me?
Germany.
Good. Huh?
Armenia,
certainly.
Saudi Arabia?
No, the U.S. is not. Huh? Saudi Arabia, okay, it's another example. But there's... No, U.S. is not. U.S. is exactly... It's a non-ethnic state. Japan is a great example. Have you ever seen anybody say, well, Japan is Japanese and democratic? No! It's Japanese! Oh yeah, they do run democracy in there, but that's not what it's all about. It's about being a state for Japan. Iceland! And many others, Hungary, Romania, ethnic states. Israel is an ethnic national state defending its people. When you say Jewish and democratic, you're saying it's Jewish, but it's also democratic. Meaning to say, they don't understand what you mean. It sounds to them like what you mean is democratic like America, which is a state for all of its various peoples that come from all over the world and share the same ideology and all that. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. America is a beautiful thing. But Israel is not like that. It's an ethnic state. And we have Arabs and other minorities living there. God bless them. And if they have rights from us, it's a wonderful thing. But those are incidental. The raison d'etre of the Jewish state is to defend its ethnic minority, the Jewish people in the land of Israel. When you say that to people are like, oh. Because if you don't say that, they think that what you mean is everybody should be totally equal there. And people get confused. And then they go, wait a minute, but people aren't really, really equal. Of course they're not really, really equal, because they have 22 countries that are theirs, and this is my little country that I'm supposed to control and to defend my peoplehood in. And when you say that to people are like, aha! They haven't been told that. It's because we've confused them. We have confused people for a long time. And I'm not saying that I'm against democracy, God forbid. I'm not saying that at all. It's just a secondary value. The first value is our Jewish state. And that, by the way, now I understand what the nationality law is about. You've heard about this nationality law that passed in Israel, which said what? The flag is the blue and white flag. Hebrew is a national language. You're like, of course, I knew that. But this law said into concrete that simple fact. It's a Jewish state. You have to say that to people. People, you'd be surprised how people don't understand things. You'd be surprised. Any case, one of the biggest, let's shift gears now. Those are just a few little things that we have to kind of wrap our heads around and change when we talk about these things. One of the biggest challenges, and I also want to, by the way, leave time for your questions, because I can talk on endlessly. I happen to care about this topic a lot. So one of the biggest problems of them all is the two-state solution. We have been taught for a long time, and in fact the state of Israel has tried for a long time, to create a two-state solution. What a two-state solution means that we want to take our small landmass. How much is our landmass vis-a-vis the Arab landmass? If you would make the Arab landmass equal to a football field, our state would be a matchbox on that football field. That is the reality. Now, here's my idea. Take the matchbox and cut it in half. The high part, the highland, the mountains, where all your history took place, make that into a Palestine, into a 23rd state. Who said that? I have to tell you something, sir. I am in agreement with your formulation. It's dumb, okay? And more, not only is it dumb, but it's been proven. Meaning that we've taken that formula and applied it in real life, and it has proven itself to be, one second, hold on, a recurring failure. The last failure was Gaza. Now this failure was so horrific. We're just this week we had the privilege of seeing once again of the scope of the failure. There has been one thing good about it. What's the one thing that good came out of the Gaza evacuation?
And
it's population.
That's right. To you?
No, to the people of Israel.
Right. The voters.
The voters.
They are done with the two-state solution. Now, that's right. Okay. I feel that in this room right now there's going to be people who say, okay, but what do we do? We're going to get to that in a second. I just want to show you something. You see this map? I'm going to pass this around. This is a map that is called, you see it's a 3D map. Yes. Give me the nice name for this thing. Relief map. That is correct. You are good, Linda. Very good. Relief map. That is absolutely correct. Now, what I do as part of the caucus that my friends and I started is that I go to congressmen and I buy these by the bulk, and I just put them down on the congressman's desk. And I say, Congressman, do you see this part? See, the state of Israel has a flat land on the coastal plain. It has a flat land in the Jordan Valley. But in the middle, there's this, like, ridge. Imagine a plate with a challah in the middle, right? There's a ridge. And in that ridge, this mountain ridge, that's where actually all of biblical history took place. That's where any Jew would have identified 100 years ago, or 50 years ago, you say, what's Israel? They would say to you, Bethlehem, Shechem, Shechem, Jerusalem, Hebron. That's the heartland of the Holy Land. And I say, now, Mr. Congressman, this is the state of Israel. It's a matchbox on the football field. Now, this area, this mountaintop, mountain range, which controls the flatlands to the left and to the right, to the east and to the west, they want to create a Palestine right there. Now, over here is the Gaza Strip. We tried this in 2005. People like myself protested against it and were kicked out of our houses. I moved down there a month and a half before the so-called disengagement and was kicked out by the chief of police myself. I was sitting recently with an important member of the American administration, and I showed him this area here south of Jerusalem called Hebron. I said, do you know, sir, that Hebron's an 80% Hamas-run city? He said he didn't know that. I said, okay. Now imagine that we pulled the Jewish community out of there, which, by the way, allows for 700,000 tourists to come visit the place a year. We'll see a little movie about that. Imagine we pulled out the Jews out of there. The army, of course, will follow. And imagine that right here will be the next Gaza. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, I said to him. And I said, I said another thing. I said, sir, you're fighting Iran. Where is America fighting Iran? Where? In Yemen, that's the Houthis. In Iraq, you know, we had this war against Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was a very bad person, hated Israel, and he's gone. And maybe that, and the Talmud says getting rid of evil people in the world is a good thing. It's good that when you get rid of an evil person like that. On the other hand, though, I must tell you that with getting rid of Iraq, of Saddam's Iraq, you basically gave Iran all of Iraq.
100%.
It's a tricky situation. Moreover, stupid, not stupid. There was a lot of stupidity there.
Stupid. Right?
Yeah, there was. It was done not. It wasn't done in the right way. The right way to have done it would have been to do it like the British. Find the local tribe. There was, you know, find the local areas. Let them have control. Instead, they tried to make it into a democratic country. It's an Arab country. They don't think like democracy. Give local people to rule. Give them strength, and they would have controlled it properly. The Kurds and others that have different parts. Anyway, it would have been done better. In any case, Iran is being fought now in Iraq and on the border of Jordan. Also, Iran has an overland route to Syria, which gets missiles to South Lebanon. So that's why we keep on seeing these bombings in these places. Iran is a very powerful thing. So I said to this member of the administration, "Sir, you're fighting Iran everywhere. Why would you give Iran a foothold in the middle of your ally? That's what Gaza is. It's an Iranian foothold on the edge of Israel. Why would you put it on the mountaintop here?" He was like, "You're right." Straight up, like, you know, there's no logic in it. There's no logic in it. So that's what we've been selling. Now I'd love to think that this is just like in a, you know, a theoretical thing, but our own country has called for the two-state solution for many years. But now in Israel, things are changing. And that's why the Prime Minister of Israel, in this last election, mentioned the sovereignty in Judea and Samaria, mentioned that there would be application of Israeli law in Judea and Samaria, threw it out there. It was a bone to the voters who don't want to hear two-state talk anymore. And that's what's happening. Now, in Israel, we know, we, the so-called, it's not a beautiful term maybe, the right wing, we know that we are the majority today. Sometimes when, like left, ultra-left people talk to me, they have a way of talking down to me. You know? You hate democracy, you're a liberal, you want apartheid, this, that. I go, and they talk to me down. I said, "You realize that we're the majority, right? You realize that your plan has failed, and now the voter's punishing you, and people want to hear from me. Why don't you take a seat, relax, let us do our thing for a little bit. You did your thing, let's see if our thing works." Here's the problem, friends. Here's the problem. In Israel, everybody knows that the so-called nationalist right-wing movement has teeth, has power. You know where you never hear about it, though? Here in America. You don't think that there's such a thing in it. I love AIPAC. I go to AIPAC, I hang out at AIPAC, you hear them talk, it's like, it's as though nothing's changed at all. It's two-state solution. You go up to the hill, little Jewish kids, little like high school kids are walking up with pieces of paper saying, "Mr. Congressman, sir, can you please help us, you Gentile congressman here in America, can you please help us give away our land to the Palestinians in the Middle East?" It's an absurdity. It's a painful absurdity. It's time for that to change. It's time for that to change. Okay, very good. All right. There's one more part and then I'm done. I'm going to, very quickly, somebody here, what was your question, man? Just quickly, I didn't want to forget your question. Okay.
What I was going to say is that the two-state solution, so-called, which of course is not a solution at all, there would be the final solution.
Right. Okay, good. Okay, but we're not going to let it happen, ma'am. It's over. She said the two-state solution will be the final solution. Fine. The fact is, you know what the truth is? Yeah.
The point is that the Israelis, they live there.
Right.
We live here.
Yes.
Arab immigration. They're Arabs from all kinds of places.
What's your name, ma'am?
Françoise?
Yes. So Ms. Françoise is very well informed, and I love that all of us should be as informed as she is. Everything she says is correct. However, ma'am, at the same time, I'm careful. I can't always talk about all that kind of stuff with every group. Because sometimes you have to have an assessment of your patient. In my patient, steak is good for you, steak is delicious, but if I try to give it to a person in a coma, he's just going to choke. And sometimes if I feed them certain information that they just cannot digest, I have to test and understand what people can digest. So I will sometimes, in certain groups, I will use the word Palestinian, even though I agree with everything you said, because I realize that I can only tackle that later down the line. I have to tackle other issues, and if I tackle that at the line, I believe that, I have a theory that young people and liberal folks are basically, they have a head which is full of landmines. And if I say those things that you just said, a landmine blows up, and the conversation's over, right? It's like I say, oh, there is no such thing as Palestinians. Boom! It blows up a landmine, and the conversation is done.
Well, maybe you don't have to say this.
Right.
As boldly as I
correct. Said. Absolutely. That's exactly right.
I feel that this is an audience.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. I was using your what you said as an example for people to understand. Like I was talking with my Russian Jewish friends, that sometimes certain things you have to do it gently. A lot of times, by the way, if I want to say something to a young person who I know it's going to blow up a landmine, I will say to them, I'm going to talk about something now which is not very easy to appreciate or understand.
Right.
However, and therefore I'm coding the landmine and blowing it up in a, you know, controlled fashion, right? But I'm not going boom, and I'm just like, because I want to get to that person. And by the way, another thing that I want to say is, learn to know the difference between somebody who's a hater and somebody who's ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
There are haters. Don't waste your time with haters.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to publicly embarrass them, which even the halakha, the Jewish law allows you.
I agree with you.
Right. Right. I can see we have questions now. All right, go. Yeah, go. No, go. Absolutely, you got it. Go ahead. She started the gun. Good. Good. What's your name, though? Ron.
So, I'm up here with my brother. My brother lives in Israel.
Yes, sir.
Jonathan, we're in Jerusalem, it's part of the Corona account. And we drove it. You have to go through the buses, stroke. So, one thing that struck me right away is the parent.
Yes, sir.
And it's a little Jewish conflict.
Yes, sir.
So, it's not about Israel that everybody talks about. Why can't we all get a unique position? Why is it? And to vote specifically. And tell me why Israelis don't do the same. And move the Palestinian areas, whatever you want to call them, out. You know, like buy a property, like in New York City.
Sure.
You buy a property, move the population out. Why isn't that happening?
Not only is that not happening, but they're doing it to us. Hold on. Everybody take a deep breath, okay? By the way, when we talk about the Middle East, we also have to have a sense of humor. A little bit of a sense of humor. We have to have a sense of humor. Like, good question. I'm going to answer your question as best I can, but with a little bit of humor. But I feel like everybody, there's a few more questions. Maybe I'll take another two questions and I'll just answer them. Go, this gentleman's.
No, I just wanted to go back to your point. You were giving us the solution.
I'll give it to you in a second.
And I know
I'll do it.
I got away from that, so
I'll get back to it.
It might inform our questions.
In his case, the answer, in his case, it doesn't. We're going to talk about, I'll promise, we're going to get to five alternatives of the three-state solution. Okay? I'll get to it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. If you say it in a question way, it'll be better, okay?
Yeah. One
Okay.
You have any insight that involves her hopes, wishes, or what decisions she might be able to serve?
You got the wrong guy, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm here representing the state of Israel. That's a question that you know. You see, you should get up here and talk about that. You need to say this is your issues. You got to fight that issue. I can't talk for the administration of where they're going to point. And I'm here really to tell you what's happening in Israel, and to teach about Israel. I will tell you that we have an administration here in the United States that, from our point of view in Israel, has done tremendous things for our... And he, by the way, here in this room, there are pro-Trump people, but I'm sure there's some anti-Trump people. I'm certain of it. Because that's the nature of the United States today. There's no question. I recommend for people to calm down about the personality and focus on the policy. Right. That's my recommendation.
Like him, not like him, he's a womanizer, not a womanizer.
He's good for Israel.
Talk about policy. Forget him. Let's talk policy. Policy-wise, there's been tremendous accomplishments. Tremendous accomplishments. With regard to Nikki Haley, something happened there, and she's out. Well, I'll show you a video with her. I want to answer your question quickly. You're absolutely right. Everything. Forget for a second about the Aliyah. I'll rephrase his question. He said, listen, Hebron is a big Arab city. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a lot of Jews there. The ratio is about 10,000 Jews in the block of Jews in the Hebron area to about 200,000 Arabs. 10,000 Jews, about 200,000. And that's why Hebron, by the way, is one of the toughest. Another tough area is Shechem, or Shechem. Okay, very tough. We don't even have any Jews in Shechem. In Hebron, we at least have Jews inside. In Shechem, we have them on the outskirts. You're absolutely right. But the question is not about these people, folks here making Aliyah and moving over there. That's not the issue. It's an issue about Israeli government giving the right to build and incentivizing it. Today in Israel, we have a housing shortage. Okay, everybody understands, scientifically speaking, it's better to live on the hilltops because the air is cooler and nicer and windier, and the flatland is supposed to be for agriculture. Okay, but in the way we have today is we have the flatland is filled with a mega metropolis, and the mountaintops are not filled enough with people, and the various Arabs' way that they get in, you know, they're filling up these places. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right about that. I live in beautiful Ephraim. Yes. Yes. And why is Ephraim so awesome? Because the government gave a green light to build. And why did the government give a green light to build in Ephraim? Basically because an amazing New York City rabbi named Rabbi Shlomo Riskin moved to Ephraim, moved his flock with him, people joined, it's close to Jerusalem, there's a big city next door, and today Ephraim is 40% Anglo and has the number one rate of doctors per capita, okay? Yeah, and it's a beautiful town. I call it the Long Island of the West Bank, okay? That's where I live. Yes, sir?
I don't want to be a millage, but...
It's okay, I let you.
Okay.
We're amongst Jews.
The subject was, can't be a two-state solution?
Yes, sir.
And you, and every other representative that I've heard for 10 years...
Yes.
...refuses to say the following thing.
Okay.
There's the PA charter, there's the Hamas charter, that are based on the Quran. How are you going to avoid the Quran and the charters that are derivative of the Quran, which says there can't be a Jewish state?
How did I not say that? I've said the word jihadism the whole time.
No.
Avoid my vision of the PA is to dismantle this jihadist and what do you mean avoid the charter? Yeah, the charter itself is what I've been saying the whole time, which is these guys are jihadists.
The Quran is for all the Muslims, not just the 400,000.
I'm not here to reform the Muslims. You know what? Let me give you an answer. I've got a Muslim friend. His name is Imam Tawidi. Do you know Imam Tawidi?
You know.
Great guy. Amazing guy. Follow him on social media. He's the best. And this Imam Tawidi, I secretly met with him in Israel recently. He's an Iranian Shiite cleric. He lives in Australia and in Washington. He made a secret trip to Israel. I got a chance to meet him, okay? And him and I talked about something. See, there needs to be a religious answer for Islam. There needs to be a religious answer to help them change their ways. You know what? Let me go one step back and then remind me to go back to Tawidi. Here we go. I talk to Muslims all the time. And I have a spiel about how I talk to Muslims. And here's how it goes. I'm reducing it into one conversation. It goes like this. I start with Arabs. I say to them, Allah loves you. He loves you. He's given you 400 million children.
He's given you 23 countries. He's given you oil coming out of the ground. Allah loves you. But this piece of land, and in the heart of it, Al-Quds, is our land. And it says so in your Quran. There are four verses in the Quran that say that the Jews are going to come back to the land of Israel. And I say to him, we have defeated you in all the wars. How is that? Is it because we are bigger than you? Are we richer than you? No. It's min Allah. Allah has caused you to lose the wars because you are not fulfilling His will that it says in the Quran. You are being a bad Muslim. Muslim Islam means submission. Submit to Allah's will and stop fighting the Jews. You're being a bad Muslim. Wait. What is your profession? Are you like a...
I'm an old chemical engineer.
A chemical engineer, okay. I was like, wait. Hold on, I'm finished. Hold on.
The modern Islamic interpretation is, yes, the Quran says that, but that was written when the Jews respected Muhammad. It's no longer true because the current Jews don't respect Muhammad.
Fine. So I'm getting to it. So then he says to me, the Arab always says to me, Ishai, you are right, but... You have left Sinai, you have left South Lebanon, you have left the West Bank, and you have left Gaza. You are shrinking. Allah is with us and we are patient. That is what he says to me. In that, what I just told you is an explanation of why the two-state solution itself is an un-Middle Eastern style way of thinking. And it is self-defeating. Now, I spoke with Imam Tawhidi. I said to him, Imam, this is what we got to do. Have you ever heard of a doctrine in Catholicism called Nostra Aetate? 1965, they got together. And what does Nostra Aetate say? It says, basically, that there's two covenants. Catholicism is the true religion, but it seems like God is with the Jews. And therefore, there's got to be some kind of dual covenant. I guess God never left the Jews like they... That's what they used to believe, that God forgot the Jews, and we're just around to be... a witness of that we rejected you-know-who, and Uncle Jay, I like to call him, okay? But now we've come to a new conclusion, and that's so great about Catholicism, it's very malleable, okay? And it's just like, you know what? Somehow the Jews have a covenant with God. So I say it's time for Islam to have that as well. Islam needs a new sit-down. A new Nostra Aetate, and they have to come to the conclusion, Islam is the chosen religion. But Allah likes the Jews, and then like it says in the Quran, they have to come to that conclusion. Now, how are they going to get to that conclusion? I am not a Muslim cleric, nor am I ever going to be one, and nor are you. But how are we going to get them to do that? So when I talk to Muslims, I tell them a lot of times, I'm like, look at your society. It's falling apart. Your whole civilization is in the toilet. You guys have to have a wake up. Look at your countries. When I was a kid, Syria was a real country. Egypt was a real country. Now they're garbage, these countries. Tourists don't want to go there anymore. You have no economy. You're falling on your tuchus. Where are you going with all this? Nowhere. And it's because you're full of hate. It's time for you to have a reformation. The problem is the people that are controlling the Arab world are the violent ones. Mm-hmm. And the jihadists. And they press down on the regular society. So the Arab world's in a lot of trouble. Finally, I'll add one more point just for you, just to make you happy. We have the Lubavitcher Rebbe, right? But we also had another Rebbe a little bit earlier. He was a great Rebbe. His name was Vladimir Zev Jabotinsky. Okay? Woo-hoo! Now he said to us, the only way the Arabs will ever come to any kind of normal conclusion is if we make an iron wall, an intellectual iron wall. They have to know that we ain't going nowhere. And they go, and therefore the two-state solution is the antithesis of that. Because then we say, we are going somewhere for peace. Instead, you got to say, I'm not going anywhere. And then they're going to start to figure it out. And you can see that in Israel today. They are starting to slowly but surely figure out, except for areas totally controlled by the jihad. Okay, fine. I have to go for the two-state solution. Break. 1 second, ma'am. You also had a chance. I don't want to rob anybody of anything. I'm going fast now. I'm going super fast. So stay with me for 10 minutes and we're done, okay? And then I'll show you a little video of the Gemara. And we finished. Here we go. Alternatives to the two-state solution. We need to come up with alternatives. It's very nice for Yishai to be up here and say it's so stupid, so dumb, as in your formula, it's dumb. Okay, but you got to have a real alternative. So here's a few alternatives to consider. And they're in the New York Times article.
One, there's a very simple two-state solution that's already in play. It's called Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan is Palestine. Jordan, 77% of the landmass that was supposed to be the Jewish people's was cut away by the British, given to a totally it's a made-up country. It's really, in today's language, it's a fake kingdom, okay? It's a fake country. Not all of them. Egypt, for example, is a real country. Not necessarily specifically in those tight borders, but it's a real country. Jordan is not a real country. Jordan is a totally fake country. But who cares? The bottom line, they cut away already our landmass, and there is... Now, Jordan is a Palestinian state. Why did the current king marry this girl, Rania? She's very cute, okay? And also he married her because she's a Palestinian. Okay, she's a Palestinian, and therefore it's the Hashemite Palestinian kingdom, so you can have legitimacy, because he's ruling these 80% Palestinian. So we have a very simple solution. We say, check this out, this is even so elegant. We say, take Judea and Samaria, see these Arabs that live here, about, let's say, 2 to 3 million of them, between 2 and 3 million, and give them, we're going to annex Judea and Samaria, and give those Arabs residency in Israel. They'll become residents of Israel, but they'll get their voting rights back in Jordan. Next door in Amman. The truth of the matter is that's the way it was until 1988. Arabs had the right to vote in Jordan. The king of Jordan one day willy-nilly took it away from them. They were stateless in the morning, 1988. We say reinstate them. Give them their statehood back. And let them have their... And they could stay in Israel and be residents of Israel, which everybody in the Middle East wants. But let them vote in Amman. That way, here's your two-state solution. There's your Palestinian state, your Jewish state, you can stay here, everything is good. The problem with that is only that we don't control Jordan. We can't tell them what to do exactly. We can't force them, ostensibly. On the other hand, and this is what the administration said to me, they're like, well, we can't exactly force them. I said to them, you know that Saudi Arabia today is looking to Israel to be what? To defend them against big bad Iran. And here's another second thing. Remember I told you 400 million Arabs? You have to remember that. The other thing I want you to remember today is when an Iranian mullah wakes up in the morning, what does he want more than anything else? The end of Israel? Wrong.
Kill Mecca.
Mecca and Medina. That's what an Iranian mullah wants more than anything. It bothers them to no end. Annoying Jewish state in the middle of Muslim lands. Very, very annoying. But the fact that the Sunnis are holding on to Mecca and Medina, that's really annoying. That is just bothersome. So that's what they want to do. And how do they want to get rid of these Sunnis? They hate them. They would behead them all. They really would. They really would. They would just kill them all. That's the way they would do it. And they're serious about that. And so therefore, the Saudis have had a deal forever with the Americans. You protect us, we give you cheap oil. Americans want cheap oil, right? Cheap gas, right? Yes, we do, right? So guess what? America is now one of the world's leading oil producers. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there's been a little change in this world? It's an amazing thing. It's really an amazing thing. It's just an amazing thing. It's amazing to me. Just in general, change is an amazing thing. Just sometimes, like, something comes around, you're like, wow, my life has changed, like, ways. You're like, life is different. Anyway, so now the Saudis want somebody to protect them. Please save me from big bad Iran. Who are they going to turn to? The Jews, right?
Yep.
It's a weird world when the Saudis are turning to the Jews to protect them from the Iranians. It's a weird world out there. But that's the way it is. And I said this to the administration. Tell the Saudis, you want our protection? Okay. Get rid of the Palestinian problem for us. Tell the Jordanians to swallow them or something. I want this problem off the table. You want my protection? If not, enjoy speaking Farsi. Okay? Okay? But I want this off the table. And that's the way to play it in the Middle East. That's the way to do things. That's the way with bravado, with clarity, and with demands, and with you know, not like, we think it's so, here in America, we think it's so beautiful to be like, Jerusalem is my capital, so dear to me, but for peace, I'm willing to divide it. Sounds so beautiful to us. It's just to them, it's like, oh my God, what is with these people? They're spineless. Here, take my wife, do whatever you want, just don't hurt us. What is that? What is that? Okay, so, it's not the liberal position, but it's the language that we have been taught. These words liberal is very tricky. Who's liberal in this room? All of us are liberal, folks. We're all liberal. I'm liberal. Believe me, I am very, very liberal. I care about the liberties of individual people. I'm not a leftist. That's
that.
You're absolutely right. I'm not a leftist. That's right. By the way, another thing is I may have some economic positions that aren't necessarily totally right in Israel. For example, socialized medicine. In Israel, a social country, socialized medicine works. We're one big family in Israel, so I want to make sure that my sister in Tel Aviv, if she needs a hip replacement, I'm willing to put a penny of my, out of a shekel for that. So,
except for Asuka.
Huh?
Except for Asuka.
I'm making a point that when I say right wing, I'm talking about security, not everything else. Sometimes people conflate, you know, these various issues. Anyway, here we go. Jordan is Palestine is one. Like it? Good. Jordan is Palestine. Option number two, says Naftali Bennett, who was recently the education minister. He says, let's just take it one step at a time. He's a businessman. Take it one step at a time. Annex Area C. That's where the Jews live. There's about 400,000 Jews. They live there. It's about 40,000 Arabs. So either give the Arabs immediate citizenship in Israel, but whatever it is, in the next area C. That is also the end of the Palestinian state, but I don't know what to do with A and B. Just take these areas and say, this is now part of normalized, naturalized Israel, okay? That's what he says. Other people say, well, what about areas A and B? He says, I don't have to deal with that right now. Let me take the next logical step. Fine. Then there is another man. I hope he comes to speak here. He's a great. I think he's actually in Los Angeles right now, and he's one of my mentors. His name is Mordechai Kedar.
No.
Okay? He's a great man. He's a great friend. And a very, very, very smart and also very nice person. And by the way, he used to be also a Talmud Rebbe. Okay? He used to teach Talmud. This is a special Jew, and he was a commander in the famous Intelligence 8200 unit. Anyway, he says, you think the Palestinians are all one people? They're not. They're not. They're a bunch of clans, and they don't like each other. Jerusalem Arabs don't marry Hebron Arabs. Forget it. And so therefore, what they really want is they want control of their city-states, their city areas. The Hebron Arabs want Hebron, the Tulkarim Arabs, the Jenin Arabs, etc. Give them the local rule. Let the Mukhtar, what's a Mukhtar? A local elder council, let them rule areas. We will be the sovereign, but let them have their cities to self-govern. Not an autonomy, not a state, a self-governing area. Okay, a self-governing area. That's what he says. Okay, you don't like that, good. I actually think that a combination of these... Okay, fine, good. You know what the truth is? The truth is we have to discuss the options today. We don't have to come out with the answer. We have to say to the world, two-state solution is finished, we're talking options right now. Fine. So we went through, one is Jordan, two is Area C, three is city-states, city areas, number four is annexation, and then it breaks into three. You guys, with the nodding, it's very distracting at nodding. You're like, it's like a Jewish mom. Like, no. You know about the Jewish mom who said, you know about the Jewish lady? She's sitting in the front row during the inauguration of the president of the United States. And she's looking at the guy, and he's getting inauguration, and she taps the guy next to her, and she says, you see that boy? He goes, yeah, his brother's a doctor. Okay? All right. Anyway. Option number four breaks down into three. I'll be here all week, folks, okay? No. Option number four breaks down into three, which is like this. One, 4A, annexation of Judea and Samaria, and the 3 million Arabs there get full citizenship immediately, okay? We will outbirth them in the end anyway, and therefore give them citizenship, and you finish the problem. Problem is, you really don't want 3 million... folks that have been taught jihadism also. Let me tell you a quick story. A few years ago, now 3 years ago, a little girl, there was a young jihadist, 17 and a half year old, jumped the fence in Kiryat Arba to Hebron, from Hebron to Kiryat Arba, walked into a Jewish house. There was one little girl, she was sleeping in bed, 13 and a half years old. He stabbed her viciously, and then the rapid response team got him, but she was killed, Halel Yafa Ariel. A wonderful little girl, a ballerina, and she was murdered. And that's what happened about 3 years ago. I was being interviewed by a lot of the media, and I said, this murderer, he is going to hell for his heinous crime. Heinous crime. But he's also a victim. Because from age zero, he's been taught to hate Jews and brainwashed. And understand that he's also a victim. So the reason I say that is because if you've been taught anti-Israelism for 30 years under the PA... I'm not exactly interested in giving you citizenship immediately. But anyway, that's what some people, some thinkers say, 4A. 4B, they say, How about we give them, we annex, give them residency with a pathway to citizenship for people who prove loyalty. And that's more of the American model. By the way, I'm an American naturalized citizen. I came here when I was 8, and 57 years later I became an American, but I swore allegiance to America. Okay, it was real. So my liberal colleagues oftentimes like this one better because it's reasonable. Okay? Yeah, they do. This is untested. Tested many of my colleagues. They appreciate that line and that way of thinking because it's like annexation to residency to pathway to citizenship for people who prove loyalty. It's sensical. Option 4, that was 4B. 4C is annexation to residency, fizeo, and that's it. Residency. You want to become a citizen of the State of Israel? Convert. Okay? And you want to be a Jew? Come over. In 2 years of yeshiva, you'll be great. All right? A dunk, a snip, you'll be okay. All right? But it's really a state for the Jewish people. I have a parable for this. I call it the parable of the hitchhikers. Do you guys take hitchhikers? No. I pick up hitchhikers every day. Now, what do I want from my hitchhiker? I want him to be safe. I want her to be safe, her to be comfortable, and I want her to get to her destination safely and comfortably. But if she says to me, "Can I take the steering wheel?" I say no. Okay? I want you to be safe, I want you to be comfortable, but I don't want you to have the steering wheel. Same thing with our minorities. I want you to be safe, I want you to be comfortable, but I'm not sure I'm trusting to give you the steering wheel. Okay? That I'm not. Okay? By the way, what's the difference between the Druze and the Arab/Palestinians, what's the difference between them? Why do the Druze have citizenship? They do great. They live in fabulous houses. They command places in the army. What's the difference between them? That's it. Their hardware is the same. They're both Arabs. They both speak Arabic. But one runs a software of loyalty, and the other one runs a software of jihad.
Yeah.
There you go. So if you're going to be jihadist, I can't trust you. Anyway, that was option number 4C. Option number 5 is one that is today, in many circles, unacceptable, but I want to say it anyway, which is help them leave. Help them leave, and how do you help them leave? In various ways, but basically we're talking about voluntary assisted emigration. Voluntary assisted emigration, maybe the two shall never really, en masse cannot coexist. Let's help them leave. Let's help them, go to either Arab lands or Europe, et cetera, et cetera. Let's help them with financial packages. Let's help them by giving them travel papers, etc. But let's help them, and let's force maybe the Arab world to accept them. Also, that's been another problem, okay? So those are options. Number 5, I'm going to just give one last option, and then I'm really, really done. This is my own invention. I call it option number 1919 was the Paris Peace Conference in Versailles. And you know who met there? His name was Emir Faisal, and he met with Chaim Weizmann. They exchanged letters. Now, Emir Faisal wasn't the most important Arab leader. He was the third son of the king, but he represented a way of thinking in the Arab world, and he was an intellectual. And he wrote like this. He wrote letters to Weizmann saying, "My brother, the educated amongst us Arabs know that you have every rightful right to live in this land. Welcome back home." He says, "We, the Arab countries that are going to be formed through the mandate, are going to rise up together with the Jewish state." There's really 4 Arab countries that were created through the mandate: Syria, Lebanon, Mesopotamia, Iraq, and Jordan, and Israel, the Jewish country. We should have a Semitic alliance. A strong Jewish state rises up together with strong Arab states. That's the simple formula, friends. The simple formula is it's a Jewish state. If there are Gentiles that live amongst us, good. They have to be loyal. It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. By the way, the Torah, if anybody wants to know what the Torah wants, does anybody want to know? Is that important? Maybe. Might be interesting. Okay. Maybe God wrote it. I don't know. You know? So, just a thought. You should know. The Torah has a very specific formula. This is your land. You have to control it. Definitely do not give it away. And of course, the Lubavitcher Rebbe he said that it would also endanger lives. It would be a security threat, as we've seen happen. The Torah says, do not give it away. Do not sell your land. The goyim that live, and I say the word goyim in a pot, just if we're confused, the word goyim means nations. In a joking way, I say there's 2 kinds. There's goyim. That's the goyim. That's them. And then there's goyim, the nations, okay? It's just the way you say it. So the goyim that live amongst us, the nations, if they're accepting of our sovereignty, they get to be a beautiful term in the Torah that's called Ger Toshav, which is resident alien. Literally, it's a Torah term. Welcome. Get the benefits of the state. Don't try to steer it away from what it is. Enjoy it. If you can't stomach it because you don't want to be under Jewish rule, go to your places. But if you can and you want the benefit of it, be a resident alien. That's the Torah's idea. In simple terms, a strong Jewish state surrounded by Arab states, they will prosper. In the meantime, because of the hate, they are falling and we are still rising. Folks, I want to thank you very much. Tada Rabba. Rabbi, if I could ask you, I want to play you just literally a 1 second, ma'am. We'll get to more questions personally, but I want to play just one quick film that I made. I'm very proud of. It's 3 minutes long. Makara. You fell asleep?
Yeah.
It may be that the.
This one?
Oh, which one? No, wait. Go up in the. Where's the options? Yes. Not that one. Left, go left, and then that one to the left. No, just one to the left.
Hebron.
One to the right, yeah. That's the one. Yeah, Hebron. What happened there? Where did it go?
Significance.
Where's the significance? Oh, there it is. Yeah. Go down to the left and down. One down. One more down. That's the one. And make it big when you press on. Okay, Rabbi? What a trip.
No internet. Too bad.
It's okay.
So tell us.
Just give a second. Guys. I know we've been waiting for 2,000 years. We'll wait for another minute, okay?
It's often the wireless that goes out.
You know the Odenheimers when they're from?
Huh?
Odenheimers.
Turn the caps lock off.
The first question. Is it the SDJ, I guess? Oh, but. Yes. Folks, in the meantime, I'll say one more thing. We're trying to educate congressmen about this also. Wait, Rabbi, the one at the top, no? The one up there, no?
I guess.
Okay. I just want to tell you that...
Oh.
Where's the volume, Rabbi?
Volume.
No, you're a little low. Where's your little low? Yeah. Everybody, don't even look at the screen. And we'll start from the start. I just want to say something to you. You guys, before we start this, you guys are a very knowledgeable crowd, most of you. But really, our people don't know this stuff. And certainly the Gentiles that even are reflexively with us, don't know this stuff. We have to educate. Folks, the other side is working overtime to uneducate. They're working overtime specifically in this country. They're working here more than they're working in Israel. Because, let's go ahead, let's watch it for a minute.
Nearly 4,000 years ago, a man left his home in Ur of the Chaldeans to travel here to Israel. He ruled no empire. He wore no crown. Yet to him was promised descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. Today, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, more than half the population of the earth, and nearly all the people of the Middle East, claim Abraham as their forefather in faith.
Among many other ridiculous things, UNESCO has the outrageous distinction of attempting to change ancient history. UNESCO recently declared one of Judaism's holiest sites, the Tomb of the Patriarchs, as a Palestinian heritage site in need of protection from Israel. That was enough. 10 months into this administration, the United States withdrew from UNESCO.
Yeah. UNESCO declared the Tomb of the Patriarchs in Hebron a Palestinian World Heritage Site. That's worse than fake news. That's fake history. Mind you, it's true that Abraham, the father of both Ishmael and Isaac, is buried there. But so too are Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca. Sarah's a Jewish name, by the way. Sarah, Rebecca?
That's his wife's name.
And Leah, who just happened to be patriarchs and matriarchs of the Jewish people. Well, you won't read about that in the latest UNESCO report. But if you want to, you can read about it in a somewhat weightier publication. It's called The Bible. I highly recommend it. I hear it even got 4.5 out of 5 stars on Amazon. And it's a great read. I read it every week.
You like that? All right? You know, I want to talk about that video. First thing I want you to know that I can, if God forbid, I don't get the chance to live longer, I can say one thing is that I was really one of the people who started the pushback against UNESCO in Hebron.
Thank you.
And that ended up as the United States of America leaving that organization because of the anti-Hebron vote, okay? So that was a big thing. Rabbi, one more short film, if we could shoot one more, and then we're really, really good. No, it's not on YouTube. It's the one that says Yeesh, that's the one, yes. Yes, let's just start at the beginning. Very short film, folks. This is what we just did in Washington. Watch this. Judea and Samaria reception at APEC. What a spectacular night. It's going to start, of course, with the national anthems, as played by our incredible Laser Lloyd.
Objective is to be sovereign everywhere where Jews are living in the heart of Israel.
Get this number. Over 10% of Israeli Jews live over the so-called green line in Yehuda, Shomron, Judea, and Samaria.
769,508 Jews that live in Judea and Samaria.
3,800 years ago, our forefather Abraham purchased the plot, the first place that he purchased in the land of Israel, in order to make a marker for our people that will never be forgotten.
When I open the book that tells that story, the Holy Bible, and I see that more than 80% of the locations stated as the land of Israel are located in Judea and Samaria,
it is simply not possible for the idea to leave Judea and Samaria and still have any possibility that the security of Israel could be maintained.
The settlements are not the obstacle for peace, but rather the promoters for peace.
The greatest things that the community can do, both U.S. and Israel, is to get more Americans to visit Israel, because they finally understand the lay of the land.
Today, we take a stand. Tonight, we retell our narrative. And ironically, when we tell our truth, we actually open the door for regional harmony.
We have to connect the dots and relegate to the dustbin the possibility of ever relinquishing Yudan Sharon.
It is not temporary. It will always be part of the state of Israel.
Okay.
All right, folks, that's just some of the stuff. I want to thank you so much for this fabulous evening. Let's hang out some more. I want to thank again Chabad. I want to thank Linda. I want to thank ZOA. I really want to thank all of you for coming out on such short notice. And the last thing is, folks, Am Yisrael Chai. We got to hold hands across the Atlantic. And one of the ways that I recommend you do that is through support, of course. But I also want you to you have a good wine store here in San Diego? Go to Los Angeles. Pick up, go to Galat Mart. Pick up 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 bottles of wine from the land of Israel. Drink it Friday night. Rabbi, Friday night wine from the land of Israel. Okay?
Deal.
Send them, okay?
Deal.
Okay? Why? So that we can support Israel? No, so that we can have Israel in our veins.
Wow.
Okay? Yeah. All right, folks, thanks again so much. Mazal tov.
Yishai, I want to thank you very much. I thought that was an excellent presentation, and you have helped my hasbara. I will know how to do hasbara better because of you.
Very good.
I want to thank Linda for the major work in organizing this event. Right after this, for those people who are interested in Yishai's initiative, Heartland Initiative, Caucus Initiative. We're going to be meeting in another room. People who want to get involved, want to explore that more, have more one-on-one conversations with him. And please take literature. If there isn't any more, let me know. We may have a little more. And if you are not already on the ZOA email list, please get on the list, especially email, so that we can contact you about future meetings.
Thank you. Someone that needs to say Kaddish tonight will have a super quick Arvit in the Bet Knesset next door. Lots of Kavana, and then somebody already wants to go into the reception, are welcome.
Thank you
all for coming to Chabad Karnaval.